Welcome to Process Breakdown, where we get proven and successful entrepreneurs to reveal step by step what's currently working behind the scenes in their businesses. Sit back, relax, and take notes as you discover how today's guest has been able to systematize their entire business so that it runs successfully without their constant involvement, like a well-oiled machine on overdrive. And here is your host.
Hi, my name is Owen McGab in Owl, and welcome to episode 43 of the Process Breakdown Podcast. Do you want your employees to think like you do and make decisions just like you do, or even better than you? Well, there are times when documenting a step-by-step procedure might not be the best option. Instead, you have to come up with rules, policies, and guidelines which will help your employees to make decisions just like you. Well, in this interview, my guest reveals a six-step process on how to create and implement decision-making guidelines to get your employees on the same page and help them think on their own without you having to guide them every step of the way. Before we get started, a quick word from our sponsor. Are you tired of being the bottleneck in your business? Do you want to get everything out of your head and document how you get tasks done so your employees know what you know? Well, sign up for a free 14-day trial of Sweet Process. And now, let's get started with the interview. My guest today is Tim Francis, and he's the founder of Profit Factory. Tim, welcome to the show.
Good day.
So, we need to let the listeners understand what they're going to be learning here. And before we even talk about what they're going to be learning, the main thing they're going to be learning today is decision-making guidelines, basically a way in which you can get your team to basically think the way you think and make decisions just the way you will make decisions. But before we even talk about that specifically, you said there are three main things, three things they have to, first of all, understand before they even get into the decision-making guidelines. Let's talk about those.
Yeah, so in my main business where I built all my systems is Tim Francis Marketing. We have clients as big as $100 million in sales and as small as $300,000. We do a lot of marketing services for them. And through the process of building processes into my own business, I discovered that there was a handful of places where I would fail over and over again.
Yeah.
And I got through it. I got through those three big landmines, and my business revenue went up by 50% in just 3 months because of how we were able to build out systems. So I'm not someone who is like an internet marketer who's telling you how to, I'm not going to tell you how to make $1 million by telling people how to make $1 million. You know how circular that can get sometimes.
Yeah.
I am a real live business owner in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, and I help real brick and mortar and online businesses that are not in the how to make money space to basically be more profitable through their marketing. That's my main business. Now, since then, I've had a number of business owners ask me how I did what I did. And so I've actually started quietly doing consulting behind the scenes to other business owners. And they run into the same three landmines. And so I've defined what those three landmines and opportunities are. And so I'll quickly touch on them, and then we can really focus in on the second of three, which is the decision-making guidelines. Can I mention the three right
now?
Go
ahead. Go right in.
All right. Awesome. So the first landmine is when you don't have the right people. It's normal for business owners to believe that they have to have the best talent. And they're just used to themselves doing everything, that their business is very people dependent. But sometimes as we start systemizing a business, we discover that it's not the talented people that are going to take us to the next level.
Yeah.
It's a different kind of person. And that's something you and I will probably talk about in a future conversation.
Yeah.
The second of three is when you rely just on step-by-step procedures, you run into a problem because it's impossible. It's impossible to write out a procedure for every possible curveball that might come up in your business.
Yeah.
And you guys call them policies. I call them decision-making guidelines. Sam Carpenter calls them operating principles. And it's really, those operating principles help you in a couple ways. Number one, They make it easy, much easier for your staff to do work for you. And secondly, when you have strong decision-making guidelines, you don't have to write a procedure for everything. Yeah. And so one of the biggest things that stops my clients and stopped myself, my former self, to putting procedures in place was just feeling overwhelmed, just feeling like, oh my goodness, like, where do I even begin? What do I do to even begin writing out all these procedures? Because intellectually, I see why I need them, but my goodness, there's like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds that I could create, and it's just overwhelming. So, yeah. So we're going to talk about how decision-making guidelines can get you past that tough hurdle in relatively few steps, which is very nice. Now, the third and final procedure landmine is not having a procedure for procedures. Yeah. So that sounds a little bit goofy, but if you think about it, if there's a specific way, whether you're using Sweet Process or you're using a different tool, there is a best way. There is a standardized way to be able to actually write out your procedures, how you name them, how you label them, what kinds of procedures you want to see included, when it's time to edit them, when it's time to create them, when it's time to delete them, how do we keep track of all of them, on and on. And you can actually create a procedure for how to make those procedures. So if we quickly recap our big three here, if we've got the right kind of people who are comfortable with technology, people who have great attention to detail, people that want to be a team player as part of a machine, yeah. A lot of people, they want a good captain and they want to be a good follower to that. So if we've got that kind of person, we've got them clear on how to create procedures. And in those instances when there isn't a procedure, they have decision-making guidelines to back them up. My goodness, that is a completely game-changing situation. Once you have all three, it's almost like the Holy Trinity, in my opinion, when it comes to really kind of crossing that tipping point. When you start feeling, oh my goodness, my staff is doing things for me. They're doing it flawlessly. They're doing it efficiently. They don't have to ask me for help all the time. Like, when you start feeling the leverage of systems really starting to take place in your business, it is magic, and you will never, ever, ever want to go back because it's just so beautiful. And this holy trinity of systems is the three items we're going to talk about, and today we'll talk specifically about those decision-making guidelines.
Okay, so that's good. I wanted to make sure that you give the listener kind of like an overview of what's going on, because there's actually three parts to it, and today's interview is focused on your six-step process for decision-making guidelines in situations where, you know, you want them to think like you and maybe there's no procedures in place already. How do they make decisions? And this is your way of doing that. So let's first of all talk about, some mind-blowing results that you have gotten from, you know, implementing, decision-making guidelines in your business. Can we talk about kind of some case study from your own?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, go ahead.
Can I tell a story? Because like a true story of something that happened in my business?
Awesome. Go ahead. Good.
Sure. Okay. So, I had a podcast. I did 77 episodes and, had lots of listeners from all over the world. It was all about marketing. And and one day we got this message from this gentleman named Philip in the Czech Republic. And he said, hey guys, I really love your podcast. I listen to every single episode. But the most recent episode, I think there was a problem with the upload. It suddenly just stopped halfway through. And then I was upset. Where's the rest of the episode? So he didn't send the email to me. That's the first important and very valuable piece of information, is he sent it to support@timfrancismarketing.com.
Yeah.
I've interacted with Philip and I love chatting with him, and that's great. So I'm not against customer contact. It's just I'm not the appropriate person to handle technical issues for a podcast upload. So
yeah.
So thankfully he sent it to support@timfrancismarketing.com. My main assistant Sarah, she received that email.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, Owen, is nowhere in our procedures do we have a procedure called what to do when you get a complaint from someone in the Czech Republic about a podcast problem. Like, we don't have that procedure.
It doesn't exist. Yeah.
It doesn't exist. And it never will. In fact, it would be ridiculous for us to to set up that procedure. So, as you'll hear me say probably many times over this three-part series, is I sincerely believe in letting demand drive decision making. And so this was a problem that came once, not twice, not three times, not 100 times. So we're not going to create a procedure. Instead, we allow our decision making guidelines to wrap around the entire business. And so because Sarah didn't have a procedure to follow, she was able to fall back on the decision-making guidelines, or like what you would call our policies in your vocabulary. So let's take a quick look at a couple of the decision-making guidelines Sarah used to fix the problem without having to ask me for help. So the number one decision-making guideline in Tim Francis Marketing is, you are an ambassador of me, Tim Francis. I'm a responsible, caring, and courageous gentleman. I expect you to act the same way.
Yeah.
So when she got this message from Philip, and Philip, you know, was a little bit disappointed, the very first thing Sarah did was she said, you know, I'm so sorry this didn't work out. She was demonstrating care, right? And she was also demonstrating being responsible, right? So that was the first decision-making guideline. Now, maybe that seems a little bit soft or a little bit, you know, airy, fairy or whatever, but it's the vibe that I want our company to have. And the next decision-making guideline she looked at is very tangible. It says, how we handle mistakes is a three-step process. Number one, we put out the fire. Whatever it takes, we've got to just put out the fire so we don't have this emergency on our hands anymore. Then the next step is to identify what went wrong, figure out a solution, and basically put that in an email or like package it together in a meeting, whatever the appropriate situation is, to talk to your supervisor. And then the third step is once it's been approved by the supervisor, then we distribute it to all affected employees. Because not all employees in a business have to, or contractors have to deal with every situation. So just the affected employees. So if we look at what Sarah was doing, she was doing exactly that. She received the email and she started putting out the fire, right? She didn't tell me about it, but she started putting out the fire. And that fire was, number one, apologizing to Philip. Then after that, because Sarah is the one who uploaded the podcast episode in the first place, she went into our hosting software and she checked the source file. And sure enough, it only half uploaded. So she then re-uploaded the file. She then republished. And then after that, she realized that she needed to test it across multiple platforms. So an iPhone, an iPad, and a MacBook. Yeah. So she then opened up iTunes and she checked it on all three platforms and she saw that she had a working solution. So she took care of, she put out the fire, she figured out the problem and came up with a solution. And then lastly, she came to me. And so I received an email, and all the meanwhile, Owen, I had no idea any of this was going on.
Yeah.
But she emailed me to say, Tim, Philip from the Czech Republic wrote, apparently one of our podcast episodes didn't work properly. So I emailed him back to tell him I'd take care of the problem. I looked into it. Sure enough, he was right. It didn't work. The problem was this. The solution is that. This is what I propose, how we change our procedure moving forward. And I also contacted Philip once everything was fixed to let him know it was all fixed and to thank him for, you know, speaking up. So,
and I like the fact that you've shared, like, you know, a mind-blowing, you know, story of how, you know, this decision-making guideline helped to solve a problem. And I like how you were very, you know, explicit and showed us an example and went through it, you know, like that. But I think the listener also might also be wondering, you know, what exactly would you say is a decision-making guideline and why is it important?
Sure. So a decision-making guideline is going to be a collection of 20 to 40 statements that basically explain how you do business. Now, I think decision-making guidelines are probably the most personal of our three major documents. So different people call them different things, but we've got like an identity statement, which is the big picture. This is the industry we are in. This is the products we serve. This is who we serve. This is who we don't serve. This is what we don't. That kind of thing is our identity statement. Then we've got our decision-making guidelines, which we're talking about today. And then our third kind of document is all of our, you know, procedures. Like, this is how we upload a podcast. This is how we publish a blog post, that kind of thing. So the most personal, I think, to the business owner is the decision-making guideline. Like, Owen, I believe that you have a certain way of doing business.
Yeah.
That if you shut down Sweet Process today, and I'm, you know, I hope that doesn't happen.
hope not.
Yeah.
Knock on wood.
Yeah. So, But if you chose to and you shut down Sweet Process today, or you sold it or something like that,
yeah,
and you decided to go start a shoe store, you know, or you decided to start a car dealership or something like that, you would still carry a lot of those same decision-making guidelines with you. Maybe not.
So is it like a decision-making guidelines? It's kind of like your DNA as an entrepreneur is what you're trying to say.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And certainly that's shaped by the business that you're in and the industry you're in. But at the end of the day, because the kind of business I want is a systemized business, and I am Tim Francis and I'm not going to change that much, it's like it doesn't matter what business I'm in. I just know that there's better ways and worse ways to do things. Like, I know that the best way to handle a problem is A, put out the problem, B, come up with a solution, and C, share the solution with the people that are around you, right? So that is an example of a decision-making guideline. And oftentimes when staff does not have a procedure to follow and they follow a decision-making guideline instead, they're usually following a combination of two or three to help them guide their decision. And so in the example that I just gave you with Sarah and the podcast yeah. episode mistake, she was probably depending on – she looked at probably four or five of the different decision-making guidelines and used those to come to her decision. So, mm-hmm. you know, you're an ambassador of me, how we put out our mistakes, that kind of thing. She was using multiple guidelines together. So
yeah.
I can give you examples of other decision-making guidelines if you like.
Yeah, I think we will cover some of them during the interview. And you also mentioned that, you know, the better your decision-making guidelines are, the fewer the procedures step-by-step yep. that you actually have to make. Why is that?
So I'll give you two examples. One's from a book probably most of your people, most people have seen this, have heard, and that's the 4-Hour Workweek, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in the 4-Hour Workweek, Tim Ferriss described a situation where he was getting more and more and more and more customer service email, but not from customers, but from his representatives the call center he had outsourced. And so then Tim put, he doesn't call it this in the book, but it's a decision-making guideline in place. He said, any problem that comes up that you can solve for less than $50, mm-hmm. just do it. Don't ask me, just do it. That is an example of a decision-making guideline. So now when his customer service reps are getting calls, they're always making their decision based on that guideline. And that single decision-making guideline cut down the workload of emails that he got, plus it also significantly cut down his need to create procedures. So instead of him writing a procedure, how do we handle people that want supplements the day before a competition? Mm-hmm. Do we ship to Ireland? Do we do this? Do we do that? He could have created a procedure for every one of those different situations. But instead, he figured out he could just put one decision-making guideline in place, and it wiped out all the need to create all those other procedures. The best procedure is the one you don't write.
Right? Because I like
it's
that.
Time, it's time, it's energy, it's work, it's more to managing your business. If you can avoid writing them, by all means, avoid them.
And during the pre-interview, you also mentioned that, you know, the whole process of creating a decision-making guideline is actually incremental and iterative, meaning that it's, you do it over and over. Can you explain that?
Yeah, for sure. So anytime I guide my consulting clients who hire me to help them build procedures in their business, it always goes the same way. it was the exact same way for me too, was I thought I would sit down and I would just crush it. I thought I would just sit down and in like 1 3-hour block, I would just come up with all my decision-making guidelines and, you know, it'd be magic, you know, all 20 to 40 guidelines in one session. But that's not how it goes. And when I've talked to Sam Carpenter, who wrote Work the System, and in the book itself, he describes it wasn't a one-time event either. It was mm-hmm. something that happens kind of organically over time. So for the person listening to this, you'll probably sit down and write down, say, 10 to 20 decision-making guidelines. And you'll hit a wall. You'll just say, well, I don't know what else to write. Like, I'm lost. Like, is there maybe this is it. Maybe there's nothing more. But then you'll be out walking your dog, or you'll be mowing the lawn, or you'll be at a family dinner. And all of a sudden, it's like something will just bubble up. And you'll say, oh, geez, I should include that. So you want to make sure you've got like a pen and paper or an iPhone or something handy as much as you can, as much as it's appropriate. Don't pull it out during dinner, but to capture all these new decision-making guidelines, because they will pop up. And like, I don't know if this is inappropriate or whatever, but I actually had one of my best decision-making guidelines pop up. I was on the can. I was just doing nothing, and all of a sudden it came to me, and my phone was sitting next to this thing. So I pulled that out, and I just tapped it in, and away we go.
Step number one is basically make a list, and you're saying sit down and just start and, you know, come up with at least 10 to 20 decision-making guidelines. Yeah. Is it like just a brainstorming, put sure, whatever you want in there?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because they will come. They will come. You know, like, Owen, you know how you like to run business, you mm-hmm. know? And some cues of what can help stimulate your thought are things like, you know, for example, how do we handle problems, which I just explained, yeah, right? How do we handle money? You know, in the example of Tim Ferriss, one of his decision-making guidelines was, if you can get it done, if you can fix the problem for less than $50, and just do it, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, how do you feel about some of these important themes? And I can thank the guys at Work the System for helping prompt me on some of those ideas. Like, how do you think of, like, how much do you care about research and development? How much do you care about, maybe there's something around your staff. Maybe there's something around how you handle waste, how you handle discipline, how you handle communication. Like, there's a whole, like, how you move through your day-to-day and how you make decisions as a business owner, it will just, like, it's in you already. You're not inventing anything. It's in you already. So step one is definitely to sit down and just put on paper whatever you can. Step two would be something like keeping a pen and paper or an iPhone or something handy for you to capture ideas as they just come up over the next probably 7 to 14 days. Then after that, the next great indicator of what your decision-making guidelines are is just to put them into action. Just put them into action in the real world of your business.
Do you mean by, when you say put it into action, is basically at this point now you're saying document the decision-making guideline, right?
What I mean is you should have them documented by now. And at that point, it's like, give them to your staff. Like, sit your staff down and say, you know, I'm implementing these, you know, this new set of decision-making guidelines. This is something that's going to evolve over the next, say, 30 to 60 days. I'm expecting us to make to make our decisions in our business based on these, you know, these principles, these guidelines, as you would call them, policies, right? So at that point, now your staff is going to use them. And you as the business owner are going to use them, and you're just going to see what happens. So often
quick question, because I want to make sure the listener is actually following each step. The first one was basically make a list. The second one was, you know, put it aside and use a tool like maybe your iPhone or whatever, and keep collecting them over time, because it's going to take a while for you to build them up. And then when you've built up a certain amount of, you know, decision-making guidelines, step number three is actually document them. And yes, I want to dive into that a little bit, because the listener might be saying, okay, what goes specifically into the, you know, decision-making guideline document? You know, what should it contain? You know, they might want to know the format of it.
Right. Okay. So personally, I've got my decision-making guidelines in Google Docs.
Okay, go ahead.
That's the tool I use. And it's literally just a document. Like, a person can use Word. Mm-hmm. They can use Notepad. Like, it could be paper and pen if they wanted. It could be Sweet Process. It's one of those things where it's not any more difficult than just probably a 2 to 3 page document with 20 to 40 statements, each of which is probably only like 2 to 4 sentences long. And so it's almost like 20 to 40 little mini paragraphs, and each one discusses a different part of what your business, of how you make decisions at Sweet Process, at Tim Francis Marketing, or at whatever the business is.
So I'm thinking it basically describes the scenario and then gives them kind of like a roadmap on what they should do, but not tells them specifically what they should do. It's like, just tells them the rules, and then how they implement the rules is up to the specific tactics or specific steps they take is up to them. Right?
Yeah. Although I would say it maybe zooms out, just at least the way that I encourage people to set it up is it zooms out a little bit more than that, because it's like if it's the rules of the road, it says don't drive faster than, you know, 50 kilometers an hour here in Canada or 30 miles in the US or whatever. And so there can be some very, very specific, very specific laws and numbers. And you know, yes, like we're in a bit of a gray area here because, you know, maybe a good guideline is saying if it's less than $50 an hour, just do it. So, so I get that, you know, there's maybe a bit of a gray area there, but usually with my clients and in my own business, as soon as you just start doing it, you start easily realizing the difference between decision-making guidelines and procedures. So, like, for example,
so I'm thinking that when the procedure, when you feel like it needs to be very specific, at this point, it is a kind of a clue to tell you, okay, this needs to be a procedure. But when it doesn't have to be specific per se and step by step, then this is where you make a guideline.
Right. Yeah. It's more kind of like the procedure is when there's a specific situation.
Mm-hmm.
The decision-making guideline is more like, hey, inside of you, the staff member, or inside me, Tim Francis, these are like the habits of how we walk through the day. So okay. For example, decision-making guideline number 8 at Tim Francis Marketing is double check everything before release. Right. And yeah. So that decision-making guideline, it's general enough that I don't have to say every time you write an email or every time you upload a podcast episode or a blog gets published, because the decision-making guideline covers everything.
I see it. And so step number 4, you say basically is launch it and make your decision-making guidelines actionable and used by your team. And so let's talk about that.
You know, the biggest thing that revolutionized photography was the digital camera, like in the last, say, 30 years. And a lot of people say, oh, that's because it's really easy to edit them and send them around everything. Yeah, that's true. But also, one of the biggest changes or one of the biggest factors is feedback. Usually in the past, in like the 1980s, you'd have to take a picture, send it off to get developed at the studio, and then it would come back and you would get feedback like, you know, 10 days later, which oftentimes is way too late to get feedback.
Yeah.
Whereas with a digital camera, you can take a picture and you get feedback immediately and you get to see instantly what you need to change. So the feedback cycle is just so fast. And so business, in my opinion, business these days is less about getting it right the first time and more about just getting it into action, whether that's a marketing campaign, a website, or a process, right? So get your procedures live and see what happens in the real world. As business owners, we get our business from 0 to step 1, we had to do a bunch of maybe research or get some experience to figure out how to produce our product or service. Then after that, we moved into step 1. And step 1 is, or I'm sorry, level 1 of a business, in my opinion, is, you know, now you're doing everything. You're doing everything yourself. You are, you know, doing bookkeeping, and you're also cleaning, you know, the office. And you are the accountant, and you're also taking care of marketing and sales, and you are meeting with clients, and you're doing absolutely everything. And that's like a level 1 business, in my opinion. That's where a person now has maybe a full-time income from their business. But to make it to the next level, level 2, what I always call a level 2 business, is like you fundamentally have to look at yourself differently. If we compare it to a cruise ship, it's like, you know, we're used as business owners looking to go to level 2. It's like, you know, and to get to that place where you are building systems and you start feeling some leverage, you're no longer thinking of yourself as the cook on the cruise ship and the captain and the person shoveling coal into the engine and like that's no longer how that looking at yourself that way is not going to get you to level 2.
Yeah.
Looking at yourself differently is necessary. And you need to look at yourself as the ship builder, someone who's creating blueprints and is on the shore, is not even on the ship. You can go on the ship if you want, but ultimately you want to get yourself to a place where you're designing the ship, then you're sending it out for a week. It's going to take a bunch of guests. It's going to go and take them, you know, to the Caribbean and back or whatever. And then when they come back, you're going to get this feedback, right? You know, they didn't like this dish. We had a problem with the washing machine, you know, this engine broke down, whatever. And then as the ship builder, you say, okay, perfect. We're going to put some patches in. We're going to fire some people, hire some people. We're going to modify what's going on the ship. And then we're going to send it out again. And then we're going to get feedback. And I think that feedback cycle is a business owner operating in reality. We get so caught up in what if this, what if that, what if this, what if that. The best way to find out is just to do it and just see what happens, right? So that's what I mean in step four here, to implement your decision-making guidelines in your business and test them. And especially if you have staff too, is you want to see how they handle it.
Yeah.
And just observe, just watch them in action and also listen to them. See what feedback they have to give you, because in certain ways, they maybe know more than you do about certain parts of your business, right?
Awesome. You also said during the pre-interview, you said let demand drive decision-making. I want to understand what you meant by that.
Yeah, absolutely. So like I just said, it's as business owners, we can oftentimes see the bigger picture, whereas our staff might be looking at just a very small, specific part of the business. We can see the whole big picture. And so... So when we think about building procedures, we start, it's very easy to get into like a massive spider web of, okay, well, oh, if I'm going to build procedures, then we need to do something for, you know, taking customers' money. Okay, great. So this is how we process orders. And then it's like, well, what if somebody wants to refund an order? Okay, well, we got to do that. Well then, but what if somebody wants to exchange an order? What if somebody wants to get a gift card or a credit, you know, to their account? Okay, well, now we need a system for accounting, and now we need a system for something else. And it just goes on and on and on and on and on and on and on. And it's like you still haven't even written a single procedure, and you're freaking out that you have to build 100. And
yeah.
It's like, no, 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 no. The way Sam Carpenter built his procedures in Centratel, the way I built my procedures in Tim Francis Marketing, and the way that anybody who's ever built any procedures at anything has always started with just the first step. And that first step is just the first procedure. So so there are definitely better and worse procedures to make your first choice. And same thing with decision-making guidelines. There's better and worse decision-making guidelines to start with. So I think that this idea of letting demand drive decision-making, that statement, let demand drive decision-making, is a guideline, is a decision-making guideline in of itself for you, me, and other business owners as we're moving through the process of building procedures into our business. So does that help clarify what I mean?
So let me see if I can use an example. So if it's in the situation where something keeps happening over and over and over again, then maybe I might just have to ask myself, is this something where I can create a decision-making guideline so that in the future when this happens, they just use that guidelines and go ahead and, you know, get it done based on that guideline? Not necessarily a procedure for everybody step-by-step what they have to do, but a guideline on how to handle it if the thing keeps happening over and over again.
You know what? It's like if the same problem keeps coming up and again and again and again, maybe I need a procedure. Maybe I do. Or maybe I need a decision-making guideline. Or maybe I just need to hire someone because they're a cancer inside of my business. Or maybe I need to fire a customer. You know what I mean? Like, you know, maybe I need to go raise some money because that's my biggest problem is I have orders, but I can't fulfill them because I can't purchase the raw materials. Like, I mean, so this idea of letting demand drive decision-making applies to everything, not just what we're talking about today, not just to decision-making guidelines. But my point, I think, within today's podcast episode is that you might be trying, like, and when I say you, I mean whoever's listening to this, you might be trying to get your decision-making guidelines perfect the first time that you write them. That's just not reality.
It's not going to be perfect,
right? So just start with the first 15 to 20 or whatever, put them out there, see what happens, and let demand drive your decision-making after that.
Awesome. And step number five, you said let demand also drive other demand, other decision-making guidelines that you're going to implement. Can you talk about that? Because I'm curious.
Right. So one was to make your first list. Two is just to let them come to you for a week. Three is to document your decision-making guidelines. Four is to implement them. Just put them into your business and test them and tweak. And then from there, step five is to let that demand drive any other decision-making guidelines, like where you're going to go to continue building your decision-making guideline list.
Yeah.
And then, which leads us to number six, which is just to adapt. Like most likely, I mean, it's been well over a year that we made our big leap with Tim Francis Marketing, and we're still tweaking things. You know, we're still, you know, honing wordings here and there. And because as we just become more and more refined, it comes up less and less often. However, we're always open to the possibility that we may need to tweak a procedure. We may need to tweak a decision-making guideline. There might be a new competitor that comes into the market, and now maybe I need to even change the entire direction of my business by a few degrees.
Yeah.
So yeah. I think it's off, like some of the business owners I work with, when I help them create systems in their business, is they have this one shot kill mentality, this mentality of, you know, I'm just going to put, like, they think of creating procedures as an event. I'm just going to, like, roll out this big procedure campaign, and we're going to, like, put it into action, and everything's going to be fine. It's like I won the lottery. It's like all of a sudden I'm rich, or I, you know, hey, I won America's Got Talent, so now I'm famous. And it's like as if it's a lottery, and that's just not reality. The reality is it's a process that goes over time, and it's a process that may never end. It may be something that you're always refining. But the thing is
so it's continuous improvement. That's the mindset to have.
Yeah, absolutely. And just be at peace with that. And the biggest thing is the hardest work, like anything else in your business, and again, by saying you, I mean anybody listening, is the very beginning. And the same is true with procedures. When you have to create the first 3 to 5 procedures yourself, yeah, it takes like an hour to two probably per procedure to really think it out, to write it out. And after that, you can start getting staff to build procedures for you. And now, you know, and then you've got your decision-making guidelines in place, and this holy trinity together, all three of them, you really start to feel that momentum and things really start happening. And for example, for me, I spent 8 days in Los Angeles, and I was just playing beach volleyball all day for 2 straight days. And I had complete confidence that everything was still running just like, you know, like clockwork. Through Tim Francis Marketing, which was spectacular. On that trip, Owen, the only, say, curveball that I had was I was at a baseball game at Dodger Stadium, and I got a phone call, a frantic phone call from one of my clients, and they said, Tim, we've got this crazy emergency. Can you help? Like, this is a big deal. So I stepped out of the game for like 15 minutes, talked to him. I told him what we needed to fix. And then the next day, I spent 1 hour. I rented a condo in Hollywood, and I spent 1 hour fixing it, and the rest of the trip was fine. And you know what? Like, some people say, well, that's so horrible that you had to take a business call while you're on vacation. My opinion is, no, you're looking at this the wrong way. I was on vacation because I set my business up this way. And if I have to take an hour out here or there, that is perfectly fine, because the other 7.8 days that I didn't have to do any business stuff was so worth it.
Yeah. Definitely. And so I guess now the listener knows that we are going to bring you back on here to talk about the process for creating processes and procedures for your business.
Yeah.
But what would you say is the very next step that someone who has listened to the interview so far should take in order to get started with creating their own decision-making guideline for their business?
Yeah, that sounds awesome. So I would say there's two things. Number one, I've set up a custom page at profitfactory.com/sweet process. And so Profit Factory is all one word, and Sweet Process all is one word, profitfactory.com/sweet process. And on that page, there's a cheat sheet and a 39-minute training video that a person can get a hold of. And in that cheat sheet, there's actually examples of decision-making guidelines. So if somebody wants to see from my business what those look like, they're sitting right there and they are ready, you know, to help out, you know, whoever's listening to this. Secondly, if a person's not interested in seeing samples, they're not interested in seeing the cheat sheet and the training, if they just want to like sit down right now and write out some decision-making guidelines for themselves, then I would encourage them to think about, you know, how do you do business? And I know that maybe that sounds vague, but think about things like, how do you handle money? How do you handle mistakes? What is your perspective on research and development? Depending on the size of the business, different things will affect, you know, different entrepreneurs. But
yeah,
it's one of those, it's almost like a fireside chat. You know what I mean? It's like, imagine if you had a mentor or an uncle or a father or something who just sat you down next to the fireside and said, well, son, or well, daughter, this is how we do business around here. You know, you are a responsible, caring and courageous gentleman, you know. And then next up is, you know, when mistakes happen in our business, this is how we handle it. This is the right way to do it. And then it's something like, yep, you know what? Measure twice, cut once. That old carpenter saying, like, you know, we double check everything before release. And it's like the collection of behaviors that you want to see in your staff. And what is a behavior? Behavior is based on how people make decisions. So give them some guidelines on how to make decisions, right?
Awesome.
So that's what I would do next.
Awesome. Yeah. And so what books would you say have influenced this way of thinking for you and why?
I mean, if I could recommend only one book, it'd be Work the System by Sam Carpenter.
Awesome book, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I used to think no book would ever beat The E-Myth by Michael Gerber, but then Sam put out his book, and especially the last, I found from probably chapter 6 or 7 onwards is where it really started hitting hard with great examples. Sam and I know each other, and I've taken his training as well, and it's exceptional as well. So those are great resources. I would say probably the book that got me the most excited about building automation and systemization to my business is definitely the 4-Hour Workweek. So I think that there's some danger around the 4-Hour Workweek because, the culture around it is, hey, I want to do nothing. And the thing is the world doesn't give you money for nothing. You still have to produce value. And so the 4-Hour Workweek, like Tim Ferriss is an exceptional writer. He's a great copywriter. He studied a lot of Dan Kennedy, and actually Perry Marshall as well. And so it's a great book for a lot of maybe unexpected reasons. Some people have actually told me that the consulting and training that I offer is almost like the sequel to the 4-Hour Workweek because what I offer is so specific about do this, then do that. Here's templates, here's examples.
Yeah.
So I'd say 4-Hour Workweek got me excited. And then, Work the System gave me a lot more tangible tools. And I've since adapted all of that into a 39-minute training and cheat sheet that people can get at profitfactor.com/shoot-process.
Awesome. And so what's the best way for the listeners to connect with you and thank you for doing the interview?
You know what? The best way is if they do go to the URL that I mentioned, if they grab the free report and cheat sheet, then they'll start receiving a few emails from me and they can just reply to that. And my team will make sure that I get whatever emails that come in. Secondly, we do have a 1-800 number for Tim Francis Marketing. And you can contact me through that, even if it's not about marketing, if it's about procedures. So that number is on our website at timfrancismarketing.com.
And I'm curious, last question for you. Is there a question that you're wishing I asked you during the interview that I didn't ask? And if so, you know, pose the question and the answer.
I think that, I think one of the biggest things is, I lost probably around 10 grand the very, very first time that I started creating systems into my own business. And it's because I hired the wrong people. It's because I didn't have a procedure for making procedures. I didn't have a decision-making guideline, so I didn't have that holy trinity.
Yeah.
And I also just didn't – it wasn't the right time in my business. I was at level 0, level 1. Where I didn't even really know what my process was.
The fact you're saying that because you're basically saying that you're not at that point where you even need to start systematizing. The problem there was the sales and marketing. I understand how to drive people in the business in the first place, not systematizing it. Go ahead. Sorry, I just got excited.
Yeah, well, I agree with you totally. Like I said before, level 0 market research and a little bit of sales is what you need to be doing, not systemizing.
Yeah.
Level 1, you need to really be selling and to be face-to-face to figure out how to even sell what it is that you're doing.
How the business works, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's still not time to systemize. So if you're at either of those two stages, do the appropriate things for those stages. Don't do anything you learned from me today, you know? if you're at that point, though, where you have a business, you're making at least a part-time, probably a full-time income from it, you've figured out why people are buying from you and how your business kind of works, you know, at a basic level, then I believe the business owner needs to focus on 3 core activities. One is systems. The second is marketing to just bring in more leads into the business to be closed. And then third is leadership, is to give your team a clear set of documents to follow. you know, to be the chief, as Sam Carpenter says, the chief reminding officer, so that your staff remembers to use the procedures. And if they fall off course, just gently reminding them. And also to be the chief resource officer. This is something I discovered in my own business. In the beginning of creating procedures, I was able to tell my staff how to do everything because I knew myself how to run WordPress. I myself knew how to run Infusionsoft and all these different tools. But then we got to a point where my staff could do everything that I could do pretty much, but we needed to do more. And so we were into this new territory where I couldn't be the coach anymore. And so I became the chief resource officer, where I said to my staff, okay, look, we hire Bluehost. You know, we get hosting from them. So they have tech support. Talk to them to see how we can migrate this website. If you get stuck there, then go talk to this plugin that I paid for. Talk to their support. And if you're still stuck, I've pre-funded my Elance account for $50 for you to go and get consulting from an IT professional on Elance. I authorize you to spend up to $50 to get a couple hours consulting so they can tell you what to do. And to this day, Owen, I still don't know how to do the task that I paid for, but that's perfect because I was just the resource officer that connected my staff to the resources that they need. And my staff, A, got it figured out, B, fixed it and accomplished the task. And then C, because they have my procedure for making procedures, they went and wrote out the whole procedure. So now if they need to train other staff, it's sitting there. Or if my main staff, you know, dies, moves away, or otherwise changes her mind about my business, there now is a procedure that I could follow to go learn how to do that.
On that note, I'm actually going to leave you to actually make the invite to you to come back to do a part two of this interview where we talk about the procedure for creating procedures. And now, speaking to the listener, if you enjoyed this interview so far, I want you to go ahead and leave us a review, hopefully a positive 5-star review, and on iTunes. And to do that, you go to sweetprocess.com/iTunes. And the reason to leave a positive review is when you leave reviews, people are going to read it and be excited about it. Come and check out the interview, and they probably find it as useful as you did, and basically attracting more eyeballs and listeners, whatever, to our podcast. And we'll be inspired to go out there and get people like Tim Francis to come on here and talk about, you know, how they've been able to systematize their business. And if you know another entrepreneur who will find this interview useful, please share it with them. And final note, if you're at that point in your business where you're tired of being the bottleneck and want to get everything out of your head so your employees know step-by-step what you know, well, sign up for a 14-day trial or Sweet Process. Tim, we done.
We are. And at the same time, we're just getting started. We got two more to go.
Before you go, we want to leave you with a free gift. Get your free systemization checklist. Avoid wasting valuable time documenting procedures for the wrong tasks. Get it right the first time with the systemization checklist. Download the checklist by going to sweetprocess.com/checklist.